This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
This is from the Blue Cliff Record, case 52. Xiaozhou lets asses cross, lets horses cross. The main case. A student asked Master Xiaozhou, "For a long time I've heard of the stone bridge of Xiaozhou, but now that I've come here, I just see a simple log bridge." Xiaozhou said, "You just see the log bridge. You don't see the stone bridge." The student said, "What is the stone bridge?" And Xiaozhou said, "It lets asses cross, it lets horses cross." Suido's verse. He doesn't set up the solitary and dangerous. In that, his path is lofty. Entering the ocean, he must hook a giant tortoise. His contemporary, the elder Quan Ji, is worth a laugh, though he knew how to say whistling arrow. His effort was in vain. So, good morning. And for those of you who are joining us this morning from your own place, we're finishing a week-long session this morning, our first of this summer training period. And Master Xiaozhou was one of the great teachers of the Zen tradition. He lived for over 100 years through most of the 800s in China. And he is sort of held up and provides an example of being a real, kind of a tremendous student of Dharma. He spent his whole life, really, coming to it very young, coming to realization when he was 18, and then continuing to train and practice and study with his teacher and traveling on hermitage or on pilgrimages to study with other teachers. He was, you know, if I had a few possible journeys back in time, I think he would be one of them. And his style of teaching was, as it says in the poem, he doesn't set up the solitary and dangerous, and in that he is lofty. He had a different teaching style than some of these earlier Chan masters who were sort of developing upaya, experimenting, as it were, with sort of ways of startling students out of fixed positions, shouts and strikes, and sometimes very physical manifestations of teachings. Xiaozhou used language in very alive ways. In one of his, record, one day to the Sangha, he said, "This self nature, your Buddha nature, existed before the appearance of the world. If the world ends, this will not end. Your nature will not end. From the time I saw my true self, there hasn't been anyone else. There's just the one in charge. So what is there to be sought elsewhere? At the moment you have this, don't turn your head. From the time I saw my true self, there hasn't been anyone else." As he speaks and teaches his Sangha. So what does he mean? Among the 10,000 things, all things return to the one. Realizing that, then the one returns to what? How do we move forth to live amidst the tragedy and the splendor without dividing, How do we live within samsara without creating samsara? Master Nanquan, Zhaozhou's teacher, one day Zhaozhou asked him, where do people with knowledge, Nanquan once said to Master Zhaozhou, people of this time must practice among different species. And Zhaozhou said, I don't ask you about different, but what do you mean by species? Nanquan got down on all fours. Zhaozhou pushed him over with his foot and then ran into the infirmary calling out, sorry, sorry. And Nanquan asked his attendant, go ask Zhaozhou what he's sorry about. So the attendant went to Zhaozhou and said, what are you sorry about? Zhaozhou said, I'm sorry I didn't push him over again. We must practice among different species, among the 10,000 things, and realize all things have one nature. This self-nature that Zhaozhou realized. And in realizing it, was never again divided, was never apart from this one. To think of a person such as this living his whole life in the Dharma, you know, I remember being a teenager, getting ready to leave high school and thinking about, you know, the rest of my life. And I remember sort of scanning the landscape and thinking there were two paths. One was do as many things as possible, have as many experiences, right? Taste all the flavors. And the other was find one essential flavor and go deep into that. And I think Zhaozhou did the latter, and in doing that, and I had some sense of this in my young mind at that time, that in doing that, I thought and sort of imagined and hoped, I think probably, that in doing that, in going deep into one thing, one true thing, that I would somehow find all of it more. That one thing would not be a small, narrow thing, if really understood. And so Zhaozhou lived his whole life teaching, offering himself. In the Lotus Sutra, in the chapter on expedient means, the Buddha says, Shariputra, the Buddhas teach the Dharma in accordance with what is appropriate, but the meaning is difficult to understand. It's hard to understand the Dharma. Right? We should know that. I mean, the Buddha said that at the very beginning. And so when we find it difficult to understand, we should just realize, oh yeah, this is what they were talking about. Rather than getting frustrated and thinking we should understand everything right away. And the Buddha said, because of this, Buddhas employ countless expedient means. Causes and conditions, speaking of causes and conditions, using similes and parables to teach. The point, he said, this Dharma is not something that can be understood through pondering or analysis. Only those who are Buddhas can understand it. Because the Buddhas appear in the world for one great reason, Shariputra. They appear in the world for one great reason. And what is that? To open the door of Buddha wisdom. To allow all beings to attain purity. That's why they appear. They wish to show the Buddha wisdom to living beings, and that's why they come to the world. They wish to cause living beings to awaken to Buddha wisdom. That's why they appear in the world. They wish to encourage living beings to enter the path of Buddha wisdom. That's why they appear in the world. This is the reason they appear. I remember in the very early years, sometimes when Dada Roshi would get frustrated, if he felt like the Sangha was being complacent or lazy or just not understanding the question of life and death as a vital matter. he would say, you know, I could just go get a, go drive a truck and make some money and contribute that to the monastery. And we would all be like, no, don't do that. And even then I thought, oh, it's so sad that you have to even say that. Zhaozhou was the name of the town where Zhaozhou settled, and he took on the name. The often the tradition was that the abbot or abbess would take on the name of the mountain. Kind of interesting, right? Give up your family name, give up your monk's name, you just take on the name of the place, right? Slipping out of one name, slipping into another, call me what you will. And so in Zhaozhou, clearly there was a very famous stone bridge, known far and wide. And so this student comes to Zhaozhou and said, I've heard about this bridge for a long time, but now that I'm here, I just see a simple log bridge. The question is simple, or is it? What is the student asking? This is the point of entry, to enter into the mind of the student. And it's not about projecting or conjecturing or imagining. It's your mind mixing. It's dropping off your name, in a sense, and taking on the name of the student. You ask that question. Now, what are you asking? I've long heard of this famous stone bridge, Zhaozhou. I've long heard of this great Zen master. But now that I'm here, I just see a simple log bridge. I just see an old man. And Zhaozhou says, you just see the log bridge, you don't see the stone bridge. And I remember the first time I came across this koan, that response got to me. I didn't know why, but there was something about it that was arresting. He's just reflecting back. You don't see the log bridge. Or you don't see the stone bridge, you only see the log bridge. What is the stone bridge? At that time, that student, at this time, this student should hear that and think, I don't see the stone bridge. What is it I don't see? I see the log bridge. What is it that I do see? You know, there's so many teachings about our delusion, our attachments, our projections, karmic obstructions, and how they bleed into everything we experience. All of our perceptions, they become our perceptions. They are what we call our perceptions. But those delusions and attachments and projections and obstructions are themselves bled into by our delusions and attachments and projections and obstructions. What do we see? When the student says, well, then what is the stone bridge? The footnote says, after all, he climbs up to onto Zhaozhou's hook. So the teacher is sometimes referred to as going fishing. They throw out a hook, a little bit of bait, and see if anybody climbs on. And that's in the hands of the student, of course. Just like going fishing, sometimes you throw out the hook, nothing bites. One day, Zhaozhou was sweeping in the in his monastery. And a student came by and said, Master, you are a great worthy, you're a great elder, why are you sweeping? And Zhaozhou said, dust comes in from the outside. And the student said, this is a pure temple, why is there dust? And Zhaozhou said, there comes a little bit more. You know, sometimes a great shout, sometimes a very strong wind enters and goes deep. Sometimes the simplest, gentlest, softest whisper cuts to the core. To see where we are tethered. And not just to see, but to enter there directly. That is the very heart of Buddhist practice, certainly in the Mahayana. To enter there. Seeing the place you do not want to go, you go directly in. But what does that mean? What does that mean when it's an idea or a concept or a situation or a pandemic or a relationship or an emotion? What is the stone bridge, student says. Zhaozhou said, it lets asses cross, it lets horses cross. The footnote says, a single net cast over asses and horses. In fact, everyone in the world at this moment has nowhere to bleed, no place to breathe. Once they die, they can't come back to life again. And this not breathing, this once they die, is the spiritual death, the loss of fixation, the loss of individuality. So that now we can truly be ourself. So when a teacher says, just be yourself, how do we hear that? It's like, oh, okay, carry on as before. No. Become someone new. No. What does that mean? Dogen said, from time immemorial, the mountains have been the dwelling place of all the sages. Wise ones, sages, have made the mountain their own chamber, their own body and mind. And though the wise ones and sages, the mountains have been actualized, and through these wise ones and sages, the mountains have been actualized, have come to life. However, many great sages and wise ones, we suppose, have assembled in the mountains ever since they entered. No one has met a one of them. A great net is cast over. Everywhere, no one has any place to breathe. Everywhere, no one can find a single one. There is only the actualization of the life of the mountains. Not a single trace of their having entered remains. And hearing these words, they can sound so distant, so somehow not this world. And that's the great leap, is to understand the Buddhas teach only for this world. There is not another. They teach only for this life. There is not another one. Not in this life. They teach only for each other one, for each of us. There is not someone else. And so when it seems that they're speaking about some other time or place or some other life or some other period of history, we should come back again and realize they weren't interested in any of that stuff. To make the mountain your own chamber, to make the stone gate your own chamber. Being in the mountains, meeting the mountains, is to practice being among different species. So Dogen speaks of mountain suchness, tree thusness, river thusness, skyscraper thusness. He doesn't speak about that, but we're updating. Pandemic, thusness. Sickness, thusness. Medicine, thusness. Sadness, thusness. How do we make it our own chamber? In the commentary to the Koan Mu, Master Wu Men says, just bring it in to your 360 bones and 84,000 pores. Make your whole body and mind this one great mountain, this one stone bridge, this one thusness, this one body and mind. Cast away your illusory discriminating consciousness and all of the knowledge you've accumulated up till now. For this one instant, cast it all away. He's not saying make ourselves stupid. He's not saying we should not understand things. We should not use our mind. He's saying use it rightly. In this moment, use it for the purpose of entering into the mountain. In another moment, use it for the purpose of understanding. Where are we? And how did we get here? What kind of bridge lets asses cross and horses cross? What kind of bridge is that? What kind of bridge doesn't have walls and boundaries, doesn't have preferences and likes and dislikes, doesn't have a toll bridge where we have to pay some cost to get through? What kind of bridge is that? To practice those walls and boundaries, those toll gates that we set up, though they seem to protect us, they don't. Ultimately, those walls in the mind just create walls, confinement. Though they seem, with a different intention, to make us special, so we can build walls to elevate, we can build walls to denigrate. In the end, they only cast a shadow on our radiance. So rather than building a wall, think of being more like water. You can cut it with a knife. You can slap it. You can freeze it. You can pollute it. You can love it. You can hate it. You can ignore it. But you can't make it anything more or less than water. That's what it is. Even when frozen, you can shape it into a wall. But it is not a wall. We can use it as one, but it is not a wall. And when the sun comes out, what happens then? What is the sun that needs to come out? This is understood even in a worldly sense. Democracy dies in darkness. Headline of Washington Post, I think. Or is it the New York Times? A striving for freedom dies in darkness. And so in working on this koan, sooner or later we have to ask, in entering into to the inner chamber of this stone gate, this stone bridge that lets horses and asses cross, and struggling with that, right? Because something is not being allowed to cross over. Only in crossing can we meet the bridge. And so what is it that I'm not allowing to cross over? Why am I not crossing over this bridge? What part of myself do I turn back? Do I not allow? And to recognize that the bridge is only a bridge when beings cross over. It needs asses and horses to cross over to fulfill its nature. You know, during Open Sozan this morning, before we lifted the silence, I was just sort of reflecting on the gift of the songbirds and the beauty of the flower spring in all of its splendor. And thinking about how the flowers are beautiful in their own way to the creatures that they need to help them continue, right? Pollinators. And so they make themselves beautiful. Now, what beautiful is to a bee or to a bird? I don't know. Is it beautiful? But if it was only to serve the bees or the birds or the pollinators, if it needed only to be beautiful to them, why then is it also are they also beautiful to us? That's unnecessary. Or is it somehow? Not only is beauty itself necessary in this world, but is it necessary for us to be beautiful to each other in some way? Do the flowers need us to see their splendor? Is that part of their life? Is that somehow part of their fulfillment? If we reduce it just to procreation, the next generation. But you know, nature is very efficient. Why couldn't it have done it in a very efficient and simple way? Sans beautiful. Is that somehow necessary? Is that somehow part of their effectiveness, of their upaya, of their efficiency, if you will, of their use of their vital energies to fulfill their lives? Are the birds, the songbirds, just calling out to each other for partners, for communication, for territory? Why do we find their songs so necessary? That Rachel Carson's book, A Silent Spring, got the intention of so many, the idea that spring could go silent. And what does this have to do with us? In some way, is our own practice, our own realization of Buddha nature, our own becoming more beautiful, necessary, not just for our lives, not just so that we can be more compassionate, but in some way that we are experienced, recognized as beautiful in the world to other beings. You know, I was thinking about, you know, with the rising up of the demand, the need for change, for justice. And then the rising up of the hatred, the anger, right? Trying to maintain the powers of oppression, and just seeing faces, white faces, angry, 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 fighting out against that loss of whiteness, of a power, of something, of some time, of something that's deserved and they're entitled to, and that those faces are ugly in their hatred, that hatred makes us ugly. I don't know what other word to use. And that same face, a moment later, an hour later, later in the day, in turning to their child and smiling, would become beautiful. Same face. And why is it that a smile transforms us into something beautiful? I mean, and it's not like I'm trying to, it's not that I want to figure this all out. It's just observing this is the way the world works. And the world works in the way that it does to work. To work. The Dharma works in the way that it does to work. So that it works. I was thinking about this in terms of some of the signs I've seen in photos of protests and counter-protests against being shut down and against wearing masks. It's a free country. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me I have to wear a mask. I'm free. That's what being an American means. I'm free. Don't intrude on my liberty. So I find that so important. What is that saying? What is that view? The definition of freedom is the power or right to act or speak or think as one wants without hindrance or restraint. So from the point of view of delusion, of individualism, I'm what counts, damn it. My freedom, my ability to speak and act and say what I want, to do what I want to do, without hindrance. Don't hinder me in that. Don't restrain me in that. Don't restrict me. The state of not being subject to or affected by something. Don't ask me to be subjected to something other than my own desire, to be affected by more than I choose. The power of self-determination attributed to the will, of being independent of fate or necessity. Don't ask me to be responsible for my actions. Don't ask me to consider how my actions, once created, are not mine anymore, but they become yours. The unrestricted use of something. Don't ask me to restrict myself, my body, my desires. But then if we release ourselves, if we liberate ourselves, then the power, the right to act and speak as one wants becomes, what do you need? How can I help? That is my desire. That's what I want. That is how I want to form my thoughts and my actions. I want to be unrestricted in my ability to serve you, in my ability to be a benefit. So I work on my restrictions, on my inability to move easily, to not be subject or affected, means to realize all the unnecessary ways in which I confine, limit, restrict myself. The power of self-determination to be independent of fate or necessity means now to understand karma. Mine, yours, ours. The unrestricted use of something means no more fixedness. It lets asses cross. It lets horses cross. It lets you cross. It doesn't know not allowing to cross. It's not being generous. It's not deciding to do that. That's its nature. That's what it does. So what is liberation? Freedom. When my freedom causes you suffering, what kind of freedom is that? How is that free? Who is free in that? Not you. Am I? But about this bridge, what if there were stones in this bridge that said, you know, I'm not really into this anymore. Right? I've got another life out there. I don't really want to keep showing up for this. I don't want to let these horses and asses cross anymore. Let somebody else do it. Why don't they just leave? Why don't they exercise their freedom? to separate themselves from that bridge. Each thing has its own essential nature and is related to everything else in function and position. Every single stone is essential. It is not a stone apart from the bridge. The life of the stone, the life of the bridge are inseparable. On the path of selflessness, greed is liberated into generosity. Anger is liberated into loving kindness. And really, I think it's a much better way of thinking of it rather than transformed. Because in being liberated, it suggests that the very thing itself is already there. That greed is a misapplication, it's a misuse, it's a kind of shadow of its essential nature, which is generosity. Somehow that essential generosity has been temporarily made to manifest in an upside down manner. And delusion is liberated into enlightenment. And so this Dharma path of forgetting the self, of renunciation, of simplicity, of discipline, of non-attachment, is the path of giving, of acceptance, of forgiveness, of atonement. You know, if we reflect on just moments when we have been ungenerous, stingy, reluctant to be inconvenienced for somebody else's benefit, unwilling to forgive, wanting to hold on to a grudge, unwilling to accept an apology, we can ask, are these actions in accord with our vows? Are they in accord with the way? Are they skillful? But at a much more basic level, just in those moments, how's it going for you? Just a very basic level. At that moment when you check in directly, when you actually just do your meditation in that moment, how's that working for you? At a basic level, what is the sensation of that? It's not just about living, having good behavior, about being morally upright, about avoiding criticism, of doing the right thing. It's our nature. And when we separate from that or create the sense of separation from that, how's that working for us? And it's important to bring it to that basic level of sensation because the mind will gloss that over with rationalizations, with reasons. And that's why our practice is continually bringing us to the elements, earth, air, fire, and water, form, sensation, perception, formations, consciousness, so that we can see for ourselves. Because nothing is stronger than that. Our own experience. In the Vimalakirti Sutra, Manjushri asked the Buddha, what is the great compassion of a bodhisattva? And Vimalakirti said, it's magnanimity, generosity. And Manjushri says, well, what should I do on this bodhisattva path when I am terrified by the fear of life? When I am stricken in my fear of life? What should I do? What should I turn to? Where do I take refuge? And Vimalakirti said, take refuge in that very magnanimity. And magnanimity is to be generous, forgiving. Its definition is especially towards a rival, someone more or less powerful. And that its roots in Latin is great soul. Take refuge in your great soul, in your deepest being, in your mahasattva. And then Manjushri goes on to ask a whole series of questions about this magnanimity, and eventually gets to the point where he says, well, what is it all based on? Right? What does it all rest on? And Vimalakirti said, baselessness. What's its basis? Baselessness. And Manjushri says, well, what's that resting on? And Vimalakirti says, Manjushri, when something is baseless, how can it have a base? Thus, all things stand on the root which is baseless. That's why Dharma practice has to go to the root. That's why if we really want to understand at the deepest level and live our lives from the ultimate level, we have to go to the ultimate place. And what has been seen, so that we can take refuge in that magnanimity, so that we can face the fear of life in ourselves and in others, is to have time to stop and turn the light around, and go to that place of baselessness. That is where Avalokiteshvara stands, in that place that has no base. That's how come she can manifest compassion. And in the beginning, we just have to have faith in that. That may make sense to us on some level, it may not. You know, what helped me in my early years was in all the times where it didn't make sense, and I needed to have faith. One thing that would help is I would turn inward and just look at my life as it had been and ask myself that question. How's that been going for you, Jeffrey? Shugan, how's that been going for you? And it was a pretty easy answer. So to turn back to that refuge was really just not... was just not. That's why in the midst of the greater the trial, the greater the disruption in a sense, the more urgent our practice becomes. It can be hard, right? It can be such a strong sense that we need to do something, to act, and yes. But in that sometimes we get busy in such a way that we find a very solid place to stand on. We lose contact with not knowing. And in that, we lose contact with the basis of our patience and our resilience, which is not based in anything solid and fixed. And when it is, it's just not resilient. Just doesn't serve. I mean, even in simple times, with smaller, minor disruptions, the more distant we become away we are from ourselves, the harder things become. No walls in the mind, no walls, therefore no fear. What is the stone bridge? It lets asses pass and horses pass. There is not a single thing that does not pass. It's just another way of saying nothing is forsaken. It's another way of saying sentient beings are numberless. I vow to recognize my life is already bound up in yours. And to the degree that I do not understand that I do not live out of that, I and you will suffer together. The footnote or in the commentary says, Xiaozhou doesn't establish mysteries or marvels. He isn't like those who in various places who say that only by breaking up empty space or smashing Mount Sumeru to bits, producing dust on the bottom of the ocean, pounding waves on Mount Sumeru, that only this is the path of the ancestors. He says others may set up a tower 10 miles high to display their extraordinary spiritual effects of the Buddha Dharma. But although they may be solitary and dangerous, they're not as good as not setting up the solitary and dangerous, as simply acting ordinary, naturally turning smoothly. Xiaozhou doesn't establish anything, and yet he has established himself. He doesn't make anything high, and yet he himself is high. When capacity goes beyond solitary and dangerous, only then do we see the profound wonders. And I think these are such important words for us, where we can be so seduced in all manner of ways by wanting to be or do the thing that is mighty, that dissolves every barrier, that heals every illness, that answers every question, that knows everything. And to trust the wonder of simplicity and the power of an action based in authenticity. So I'll end with a poem. Day's end, simple wonders of giving and receiving, everyday actions of living and dying, walking home, I feel the earth beneath my feet. It gives easy passage. Each step, a subtle intermingling. Each step, a subtle intermingling. Calling us like the songbirds, like the beauty of the flowers, like the tragedies in our world, calling us within all of the subtle and large actions to the subtle intermingling, the intimate communication. And so, to all of those of you who are sitting with us during the week, thank you for being with us. You know, many of you spoke about, to Hojin Sensei and myself during the week, about how helpful it was to see us sitting here. And I just want you to know, for me, and I think I can speak for many of us, how helpful it is to us know that you were sitting with us, even though we couldn't see your faces, to know that you were sitting and eating and walking and studying the Dharma with us in your own place, and that we, you know, in this way are practicing together. And in this way, being those stones in this bridge, which we just can't take them out. So thank you for your week and for those of you who joined us this morning, and thank you to all of you. You stones in this bridge, you.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page. or scroll down and click on Retreats.